This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast. In this podcast, I focus on talking to people about the benefits they've experienced in sobriety. We talk a little bit about their journey, why they went sober, how they went sober, but most of all, we talk about why they enjoy staying sober. And today I'm talking to Linda. Linda contacted me in early 2024 when she was doing Dry January. And then we've stayed in touch ever since, and she's just celebrated her 1 year of sobriety. In this conversation, we talk about Linda's job in the police force and how things have changed in that area, how culture has changed and attitudes have changed towards alcohol over the 21 years she's been in the force. So Linda, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm so pleased you said yes when I asked you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Doing a lot better than I probably would have been about 18 months ago.
Well, tell us a little bit. How long have you been sober? How did you get sober?
So I have now been sober for just over a year. I started it due to, obviously, everybody else has feelings that they drink too much. And then I saw a video of you on Insta, and you just literally was like a mirror image to me, and it was just everything that I was feeling at the time.
So yeah. Because it was the same time of year, wasn't it? Because I did mine in Christmas. Did you just get to that Christmas and go, oh, I've had enough now?
Do you know what? Obviously, because I work a lot through Christmas anyway, I'd got to days that I just had off just before New Year. So I was off New Year's Eve, and I was going to be off. I was working New Year's Day. So I thought the weekend before, I finished work and I thought, I'll have a drink. And then when I got up in the morning, I just thought, I just feel dreadful and I just don't want to do this anymore. So I thought there's nowhere other option than to start now, not just wait till the 1st of January, just do it now. So that's why it was sort of the 30th, really.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to grab the bull by the horns, haven't you, and just go for it.
Yeah. So it hadn't actually been a significant sort of nothing had happened. It was just, I think, as your life goes on and you just sort of look, you scrim through Instagram, and it must have just sort of picked up, and I just saw you. And everything you said on that video was exactly true, because it was how I was feeling as well. So
was it just, which video was it? Was it the one where I'm really fed up? And
yeah, all I saw is you looked like you were washing up.
Oh, yeah.
I just stand here thinking, when is it going to be a time where I can have my next glass of Prosecco? And that was it. And I thought, oh, my God.
And yeah. that spurred you on to just go, right, well, I'll do it now then.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, congratulations on your first year. What has it been like?
Do you know what? I think it's just, I really thought it would bother me. I really thought, oh, my God, I'm not going to be able to go anywhere. I'm not going to be able to go to a function. I'm not going to be able to go out with work if they've got any drinks. On holidays, you know, when you get on holiday. And I thought, how am I going to do this? But to be fair, I haven't had one craving. And I think when you set your mind to it, and you obviously listening to your podcast, I've been fine. I think all the worry was what people think of you. Oh, I'm not having a drink and all the usual stuff. But yeah, it's been okay. And I felt so much better because of it. I think that's the thing, how you feel inside in relation to your mind and everything like that. You just think, why didn't I do it before?
So when you made that decision on that day in December, did you think, this is it, I've just got to stop this? Or were you saying to yourself, I'm going to do Dry January, and then it became 100 days? Or was it just a decision that you made?
I think because of the way I was feeling, and every time I sort of frustrated about stuff, it was all because of that. When it comes to thinking about it, you think about the choices you make. Oh, that wasn't very good. Oh, I'd had a drink. oh, that argument you'd had, oh, that wasn't very good, but yeah, I'd had a drink. And every single thing went back to the same person, the same thing, alcohol. And I thought, I just don't want to be that person anymore. I mean, I'm not going to lie, actually thinking to yourself, if you do this, this is going to be full stop. You're not going to do it ever again. You do think, oh God, can I do that? Am I going to be able to go out and not have a drink when someone says, here, I've got your glass of wine? But I think reading and obviously listening to podcasts and reading books, you sort of change the way your mind thinks about alcohol and what you actually know about it. That's really dangerous. That really, at the end of the day, it's just a poison that you're putting into your body.
And it takes time, doesn't it, for that to really sink in? Because we can read it and we can kind of, I don't know, sort of logically accept that this is toxic and it's causing these problems and everything else. But it takes a little while for the subconscious and your emotions to catch up with that. And so now you sit here going, yeah, I don't want it. It's toxic. And I feel better without it, basically.
Definitely. And I think you still get those little, I went on holiday and we'd gone to Paris and I was like, a little bit, just a teeny bit going, oh, I'd love a glass of wine in France. But then you go, no, you can't do that because then that would literally undo everything that you've worked towards. So yeah. And then it became after that, I think after the first holiday that I'd done, I sort of thought, no, I can do this. I don't need to have this to enjoy myself or, to feel great about everything that's going on.
And the first holiday is a bit strange. I remember that. I remember lying by the pool. It was actually in this country and it was a sunny day. I mean, those don't happen very often. And yeah, I do remember having those conversations. Oh, it would be nice. And you really do have to catch yourself, don't you? It's a bit like when you want to go to the gym and you wake up and you think, oh, it'd be nice to stay in bed. Yeah, we're always going to have decisions to make, aren't we? It's about going, yes, but if I do that, then I sacrifice X, Y, Z, and that feels good to me. So I'm not going to have a drink, or I am going to get up and go to the gym.
It's true, because I know that if I did go back, I would just go back to the way I was before. Oh yeah, because if I people at work, oh, when we go out, but why aren't you having a drink? Because if I had a drink, I would be on it,
Yeah.
I'd have another one and another one, and that's it, and that's looking. Yeah, you sit there going, well, no, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't sit there smuggling, drinking, and having to have it in the morning. But I do have a really bad relationship with it.
Yeah.
So.
I'm putting the blame where it needs to be on alcohol because it is an addictive substance. And so the fact that some of us have become more addicted to it than others isn't really a surprise.
No, because really, when you look at it, it's you're sort of brought up with it, aren't you?
Yeah.
And as a child, oh, when you can have a glass of wine with your meal and you sat there and you're 10 and you think, no.
I
Should
remember having a sip of my nan's sherry, I think, at one point.
be. And that's it. It breeds into you. It's fed into you every day of growing up that if you go out or if you go to a function or if you have a if you have a celebration, if someone dies, everything is about alcohol on that thing after.
I used to say I didn't need a reason to drink. Everything was a reason to drink.
It really is. Even my birthday. What are you going to do? I went to the Moulin Rouge in France for my birthday, and the menu was the gift when you walk in was half a bottle of wine, and I was like, I don't drink. Do you have something else? I just had a Diet Coke, and because again, I think when you go to these places, oh yeah, you could. Mamma Mia was actually Mamma Mia was my first time out for Christmas. I got Mamma Mia at the O2, and on the menu it was half a bottle of wine each. And my daughter was doing Dry January as well, and she said, "Oh, we're doing Dry January. We don't want wine. Do you have any non-alcoholic alternatives?" And we ended up just having lime and sodas. But again, that's just what you get. And then looking around and seeing, and I thought, if I'd have been drinking, I would have exactly the same person that was sat next to me, literally steaming, because they'd gone out before the Mamma Mia show. And then, because I would have had a few before I'd gone, and then I would have a few there when I got there, and then just carried on.
Yeah, it's so sad. And you've paid money and you've looked forward to it and you're with your daughter. I mean,
And you don't remember the night.
no. I've got so many comedy shows that I went to that I know I've been to see Bill Bailey and Dylan Moran and all my favourites, but I can't tell you what they said.
No.
I know I was laughing. I remember that. I was also struggling to focus by the end of the night as well.
It's true because you lose. Everyone says, oh, loosens up. It doesn't. It just takes everything away from you. So, but yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your job.
Right. Well, I can't go into too much detail, obviously. But obviously, I've been in the force for 21 years nearly now. And back in my old force in Manchester, it was always when you had long shifts, if you'd finished a set of long afternoons, you went to the pub. If you didn't want to go, everybody in your shift would look at you and you'd be thinking, oh God, it's like the fear of missing out, isn't it? Or what if they say something about me when I'm not there? And oh, look at her, she's not coming out, she's not a team member. So we would go and have drinks after. If someone had a birthday, we would literally have a pub, which was the police pub that we all went to. I mean, back in the days, there was bars in police stations a long time ago.
Yeah.
There was bars in police station, which is it's crazy now. It's not anymore, but
Who for? I mean,
there's some old stations would have bars in. If you'd had a bad day at work, or if you'd had a really long day, I'll go home, get yourself a glass of wine, and you'd be like, everything was alcohol related. I mean, I remember talking to one of the mental health people that they do inputs now. And she says, we don't do that anymore because gone are the days where you encourage people to drink alcohol to cope with their stress. But
yeah.
in the early thousands, that's how it was, it wasn't about, there's been a lot more about mental health now, but it was just, oh, like, look at building sites, even schools, teachers, always, oh yeah, let's go to the pub. So again, alcohol used as, oh, you've celebrated, or if you've done something well, or you need a drink because you've had a really bad day. It's always there, the answer to it. But thank God, no, we don't do that now. So yeah, it's a lot better now. They used to say when you got to 20 years, you'd literally have a breakdown for the amount of sights, things you'd witnessed, things you'd dealt with, people you'd seen, harm, everything. Because it is a lot. It's a lot to take in and a lot to deal with in the police force. But now it's more, you have sort of apps on your phone where you can sort of speak to people, self-refer, get tips on alcoholism. Everything's there. So it is a lot better than it was. But back in the day, the culture, I can't tell you the amount of times I got told to go home and have a gin and tonic. So again, you're sort of encouraging that drinking home thing.
Yeah, and drinking to cope.
Yes, and you shouldn't be. Alcohol just makes it worse.
Yeah.
At the time, but then when you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you are more anxious than you were before.
So you've seen that change. Do you think that people are finding better ways to cope, or is the habit so deeply ingrained that it's still go home? It's just that you're to not told to, you just do it.
So the old generation of policing, which is coming up to, a lot of them have retired, and sadly, a lot of them go into being full-blown alcoholics and die because of illnesses. But I think, I mean, I do know, I suppose a few people who don't want to share their sort of stories and stuff might go home and drink. I don't know, but in the new gen, I call them the newer officers. That isn't a thing anymore. I don't know about yourself. I find that the majority of the youth these days don't have the same drinking ways that we do. When I was young, I would be out Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. I was literally, the minute I finished work, I was out meeting my friends in pubs. I find now with the younger generation that I work with, they only go out, they'll have two drinks, and that's it. So I don't know if there's been some sort of shift with alcoholism. Or how you drink when you go out, whether that be in cost or whatever, I don't know. But I am aware. You can tell, because you speak about it at work, and people will mention it. They'll ask questions. I don't know is the answer to that. I mean, my thoughts that I'm in now are really good, but I think due to the fact that people have passed away and had problems, they've had to do something.
Yeah, and there has been a big shift as well since COVID, where they are now getting the data for the last 4 years, 5 years, and realizing the impact of things like that. That, you know, it's almost hitting crisis point, particularly with women.
Oh, definitely.
Because we are the generation that drank, and I say this all the time on the podcast, like Ladettes, we were encouraged to drink like men.
Yeah.
To do jobs like men, to take everything on, we can do it all. And I think we've just got to the point of realizing, why would you want to? I was talking to somebody this week who was talking about his son and his daughter, and neither of them drink. They might have one once in a blue moon, but particularly the son, he says, is really into his fitness. Now, I think when I was growing up, if you went to the gym, they took the mickey out of you.
Yeah.
It wasn't cool to go to the gym. It was almost something I didn't really tell people that I did, that's another culture shift as well, isn't it? That, you know, what's wrong with looking after yourself? It was almost like we were rewarded for not looking after ourselves.
Well, back in the day, you had to be in the pub. If it was a Friday, well, yeah, we're going to the pub. And it would be all day in the pub. My children are the same, barely any alcohol. Not like me. I mean, I would go out and I would, just to prove to others, I would drink Newcastle Brown. Why? Other than put on God knows how much in weight because it was brown ale. But literally, I would down a bottle of Newcastle Brown just to prove to people that I could do it. And that's what it was like.
You had to prove your worth. Did you find that in the force, though? Was it quite male dominated?
I mean, back in the day, obviously, it has progressed, you know, equality and all that. And women, we have a women networks, police associations for women. And it is a lot better than it was. You're not used just for certain little jobs that only women can do. It has progressed a lot from that. And people are in positions which they should be. But in relation to drinking, yeah, I suppose because I was part of the team. I wasn't looked at as a woman. I was looked at as part of the team. So why are you not coming out? You need to come out because the shift are going out. And, you know, why are you not coming on the Christmas do? Why are you not going out to someone's retirement? Why are you not going to someone's wedding? Always the same.
Yeah, I'm just making that connection there, that in the industry that I was in, sort of the filming industry, and it was quite male dominated. I mean, there was all of our customers were men, and you almost wanted to prove that you could match. You know, you were just as, it's wrong, isn't it? But you were just as switched on. You were just as good as any other bloke that could do this job. And that's, maybe that was subconscious on my part, I don't know. But I would match people drink for drink, and it was almost a pat on the back. Well done, you.
Yeah, because you weren't lightweight.
Yeah. Oh, no. Worst thing you could be called was a lightweight. Now, oh, that would have been a real compliment now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous, isn't it, when you think about it?
And I wonder if that was just that particular era, really, because if you go back 10, 20 years before that, it wasn't like that.
No.
Women would have been really, gosh, you didn't drink at home. You didn't go in a pub. You didn't drink pints. You drank halves.
Oh, well, I drank pints as well. And I remember, I mean, my dad would take her out on a Sunday night. That was the only time she could go into the pub. And that was like, yeah, I'll take my wife out on a Sunday night or a Thursday night. And they would sit there and they'd be given the smallest drink ever.
Yeah.
The men stood at the bar just chatting.
And actually, thinking back to that time, do you know those awful little wine glasses? I used to hate them. Those like old fashioned little wine glasses. So if you went to like a working man's club or something like that, you got these hideous, thick, warm white wine. And it wasn't exactly, we weren't geared up the way that now you've got these beautiful, deep, massive, bulbous wine glasses. And well, of course we're drinking more.
Yeah, because some of them you can actually fit an entire bottle in.
I know, I did it.
Which again was done in COVID, because in COVID it then became a joke and really funny and great to do. My God, the industry, the alcohol industry must have been clapping their hands through COVID, because they got free advertisement from every single person on a social media site. And again, massive goldfish bowl wine glasses.
Yeah, it does glamorize, and that's the thing, it's when it normalizes it.
Yes.
And then you go, oh, well, actually, and I did this many times, I don't know about you, but you look at it and you go, that must be all right then.
Yeah.
It can't be that bad. I must be okay. Never mind the pain in my back. I must be okay.
Because you're literally doing what everybody else is doing.
Did you have any physical, like, symptoms or signs that you were drinking too much?
Well, I ended up with, and I'm not sure if it is that, but I ended up with underactive thyroid. I'd actually already had breast cancer. So really, to me, actually just drinking wine and Prosecco and going out, I wasn't looking at what it was doing, could potentially do to me medically as well. Because when you look at studies now, alcohol can be the cause of a lot of cancers. So I wasn't really taking into account any of that. I'd started getting really bad sort of aches and pains, you know, aches in my hips, aches in, you know, general sort of health things, when really I never had that. I was worrying about liver and stuff like that, because you sort of think back and you look at it now, and COVID was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And then you look at how many years you actually have been sort of drinking to excess and stuff, you wonder health wise what you're actually doing to your body. I mean, now, I mean, your skin, I mean, I always remember my face for always being really bloaty, and red eyes, and just constantly having a hazy headache. You know, it's just that in the front of your head all the time. No, nothing else. But I do worry about the cancer sort of thing coming back. And yeah, I'm not the best patient.
Are you okay now?
Yeah, I'm fine. This year it'll be 20 years since I had breast cancer. So I look at it and think, do I want to go back through all that again? 20 years has passed. Do I want to put my body through that again? No, I don't. So again, I have to start looking at the healthy options. I mean, I've been a vegan for, this is my third year of being a vegan. So I cut out dairy and meat anyway. I just needed to get rid of the other bad thing.
I mean, 20 years ago, they probably definitely wouldn't have mentioned anything about the risks, the cancer risks with alcohol. And that's not to say that, because it's such a delicate subject, isn't it, to talk about, because it's not saying that anything's to blame or anything like that, but it's just you increase your chances of these things. So if you've then got a genetic predisposition or bad luck.
I mean, even when I was having treatment, I was never told not to drink. Which
that really does surprise me, because obviously, did you have chemo or?
I had chemo and radiotherapy.
So that's bombarding your body anyway to get rid of cancer, and alcohol is a toxin, and it just wasn't. It amazes me. Why don't doctors say, by the way, while you're going through this, it's probably not a great idea to drink? Or is it that they think it's an emotional support then?
I don't know. I just think it may be emotional, or really that they don't. I think studies have improved from 20 years ago, because you're talking 20 years ago. So in relation to studies and the way that everything's looked at now, it's a lot different. So that might be the case. I don't know.
I know when I had that bowel cancer scare last year, there was a piece of paper, a document that I was given, and it said that if everybody exercised, if everybody was a healthy weight, if everybody didn't drink alcohol, and I can't remember what the other things were, because those were the things that I kind of jumped out to me, then the doctor would be seeing, I think it's 6 cases instead of 10 cases per day, I don't know how, I can't remember the exact figures, but it was that it would reduce your risk. And that was quite comforting, actually, to see on paper that, you know, you were being given, if you're going through something where you're afraid you've got cancer or you're having a screening test, seeing alcohol as being one of the contributory factors.
Yeah, it's true. It is really true. I went for a last checkup a couple of weeks ago, and he said to me, he went, everything's fine. And I said, he knew that I'd stopped eating meat and stuff. And I said, oh, I haven't drank now for a year. And he was like, it just looked at me. And I went, I know. And he says, that is the best thing. He says, I'm so happy for you. And I said, I am. I says, because I have felt so much better since. But yeah, he was sort of looking at me going, God, he says, you've just given it up completely. And he said, yeah, he says, it was like, well done. Because I know they still have this thing, don't they? See so many glasses, this thing where we always look. I mean, I actually had a measurement that I used in Slimming World. Then I could still have a drink when I was dieting. And that's, again, they're like, oh my God, you're still saying that I can do something. And it's still getting in there. It's still hanging there. Look, I can do this as well. Everything in your life, I can be involved in.
Exactly. Every diet. In fact, somebody said to me that they won't come up with a diet that doesn't include a way of drinking alcohol. Even the Atkins diet, you can drink vodka.
Yeah, I did the Atkins diet years and years ago when it first came out. And I never drank spirits. Never. And because it said you can only drink vodka or something like that. I tried vodka, which I don't like. I don't like spirits at all. But with gin, I can have a couple. Well, I could have had a couple. That's still, again, not my type of thing. But yeah, I literally would buy vodka so I could have a drink. It's crazy, isn't it? You're like, I don't like it really, but I'm just going to have it. Then I can, because I can't have wine or whatever it was at the time. I'll have this instead. It's just ridiculous.
It shows how sort of integrated it is with life. So, shall we get on to the three benefits that you've noticed? We may have touched on some of them already, but what's your first benefit?
My benefit is just my mental health, really, my well-being, how I think about things. I would literally be awake all night worrying about a job I'd had ongoing, worrying about something that was going to happen that might not happen. And I was a constant worrier. I would literally be filled with, oh God, this is going to happen. Doom and gloom all day. Oh, if I don't do this, this will happen. If I don't do this, oh my God, that might happen. And every single day I went either to work or out, I would be worrying about something. And now I don't have anything. I wake up and go, nothing's there. Something's on at work. So I'm walking. I mean, obviously I'm covering at the moment the office, and I walk in and I go, yeah, there's a job on. Let's just get on with it. So that is just amazing, the way it's changed, that I don't let things get to me. I don't snap at someone. I mean, I would walk in the office and it would be like the ice queen has appeared, because I'd either been in a bad mood or I wasn't feeling it. I was tired, and everybody would feel that I wasn't in the best mood. I think we've all been there when we notice someone's not really in a good mood, and that would be me. But now I'm just, oh, you're worried about that. Don't worry about that. It's really not a big deal. And so now when I do everything, even driving to work, when someone annoys me driving, I just think, yeah, then let it go. So that to me is so much better, that I just don't have that doom hanging over my head.
How long did that take to clear for you? When did you first notice, oh, I feel calmer?
Do you know what? In the first month, you obviously have your ups and downs, don't you? And I've mentioned that I've read books, and you obviously are aware of Alcohol Explained and stuff. I think because when I did hear it, that this might happen to me and these are the reasons why you are feeling this way, I think gradually over January and into February, I started looking at the way that I should look at things for what they are. Like, is it that bad? is this, if I don't do this today, is the world going to end? Probably not, no. If I don't get to work 20 minutes, if I don't leave the house now, because my kids will drive, oh my God, I drive them mad. If I was leaving to go on holiday and I was not at that airport 3 hours before I was due to fly, all hell would break loose. I'd be panicking all the way in the car. I'd be panicking on the train if I got the train to the airport. I'd be panicking in the taxi going, oh God, what if it breaks down? We're not going to get to the airport. We're not going to be able to go on holiday. And it was just that. That was the type of person I was. My daughter will say, the reason I get to the airport early is because of my mother. The way she went on and on and on. I mean, God help me if I've gone away with a family member who wanted to get to the airport 1 hour, 30 minutes before. I'd be on the roof. But yeah, all that, no. We're going to get there. The train isn't going to break down. And if it does, well, we'll just sort something else out. But yeah, a lot of the time, I don't know, I think probably a good few weeks really, because even now I have to stop myself when things sort of get to me. I think, nah, it's not that bad. But I don't have that lurky feeling of that anxiety. It's the anxiety inside that makes you do it. I think we all know what that feeling feels like. But yeah.
I think that's important, isn't it? Because in the first month, you're right, you're dealing with so many other things. You're going to be up and down. And I get messages from people saying, oh, I'm disappointed that I haven't lost weight yet, or I'm disappointed that my skin has broken out and I was expecting my skin to be glowing, or that I thought I'd feel less puffy, or whatever it is that they had their heart set on. But you really do have to just give it time, because everybody's so different.
I remember my face still being, I think my eyes were the only thing that I actually noticed. They weren't pools of doom anymore. They were just nice, bright, white, normal coloured eyes. Weight-wise, I didn't really expect that with me, because I've obviously struggled with trying to get my thyroid medication right. So even though I do go to the gym, it doesn't sort of drop off as fast as I would do. Plus, I'm old as well, and age, and your metabolism. And I think
you're not old.
But I think sometimes you have to take into account that, you know, with your skin, your age and everything else that's going on in your body, not necessarily going to give you clear skin. If you stop drinking, you might have a skin condition that, for me, it was more of the puffiness. And I think once the puffiness goes down, your skin feels and looks a lot better.
It does. It took a while for me. It really did. It broke out before it got better. And then it was quite gradual. So it's easy to look back, isn't it, from like a year on and go, gosh, haven't I changed? But when you're in it, you don't see it.
No. I mean, I've looked at pictures now. I go, oh my God, which is usually me like
with a glass of wine in your hand. I have to, you know, explain what you were doing there and posing with it, isn't it?
Look at it and you think, oh my God, every single picture that I want to use for a before and after has got a glass of wine in it. And it's like,
pretty appropriate then.
But I think it was good. I think my holiday pictures, I think good 6 months before I actually noticed the difference in my face. Yeah. And even now, you know, some of the girls I'll go at work, when I do show them a before and after picture, they'll go, oh, because you can see it now, can't you? Because you see people every day and you're looking at yourself every day in the mirror as well. I think if someone said to me, what is the best thing you noticed about not drinking? It would be about the way I feel.
Yeah.
Not the way I look, about how I actually feel and how I'm able to not let things get to me.
And you can't quantify it. You can't do a before and after.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a world away. So how was it then, this holiday that you just went on this year, sober? What was the airport like?
Well, obviously the Paris one was fine. We didn't go to the airport. We went to the Eurostar and I was with my daughter. But the first I solo holiday, and my thing would be I book the lounge because I want to go and have a glass of something and get some food and chill before I go on. And then I would then go on the plane and have some more wine. And then I would land and then have more wine. when I'd seen my friends that I go and visit, and I'd think you couldn't even get to the point where you might possibly remember how you actually got there, because there's always an offer on the plane, isn't there? If you buy two, get them cheaper. And that would be, yeah, go on then, I'll have two. And then you just think, oh, you've got another 45 minutes. Oh, well, I'll just have one more. Which is, when you think about it, I think, oh my God, what am I going to do when I get to the airport? Right. Well, first of all, I'm not going in the lounge, which I did think afterwards, this is horrific because I don't like airports. And then I thought, I went to the bar and I got a non-alcoholic beer. So that was easy. My main task was sitting on the plane. I was like, oh, am I going to want a glass of wine? Everyone's ordering them around you. But no, it was fine. I didn't have anything. I think I had a coffee in the end. And then when I got there, my biggest task was explaining to people that I didn't drink anymore. It was because I go there quite a lot. I've been going there at years. I told my close friends that I wasn't going to drink before I went and that I'd stopped. But the comments and the digs and the it was a nightmare, but I just sort of stood my ground really and went, well, and then everyone's having fun and everyone's having drink, you know. But I think because I'd been so defiant with them all, I wasn't too bad. But my last one that I'd gone out to, I went to a wedding, a Greek wedding, where obviously, again, I was thinking there was a free bar, everything was put on, and I thought everyone's drinking on the table except me. But again, you look at it, you evaluate it, you think, sort of look around at everyone's half cut, and you think, do I want to look like that? Do I want to do that? And yeah, I didn't. But that was the main thing out of the way, going to Greece with not having any alcohol. But even now, still people say, now you've done it for a year, you're going to start again.
They're still asking you.
Yeah. Some people still do, and I go, no, you do know that when I said I was stopping drinking, I was stopping drinking. But yeah, and that's, I don't know, I think it, some people have problems themselves, and to face something that you might have questions about in your own head is difficult. Because, you know, I've been there, I've gone, oh, do I want to, you know, you see people sober. And you think, do I want to be that? Do I want to be that person who never drinks again? And that's it, never. And that's what I got my head around. Not just I'm doing it for January, not just I'm doing it a year, completely, never doing it again. And I suppose if you said that to someone who likes drinking, but then again knows they may have a problem, that is a really hard decision for them to make.
Yeah, it's not possible really for to comprehend in that moment. That's something that comes over time. I mean, it's not so much that I don't know how I'd phrase it now. I know I wouldn't touch it.
No.
I'm not interested. I would never smoke a cigarette again, and I will never touch a drink again. I'm not interested.
It's the same thing, isn't it? You know, when you give up smoking, I gave up smoking, God, I don't even remember it was that long ago. But if you looked at yourself back then when you were about to give up smoking, would you? It's the same thing as alcohol.
Yeah.
I, again, and then people, I think I found it. I found it really hard to stop smoking when I first did it, probably why I started again. But I think, again, I've gone through that process with my brain thinking I need to stop smoking. So when I did stop smoking, I made that decision. It wasn't that hard. I am the world's worst ex-smoker.
Yeah, same here. I hate it.
Disgusting. But again, it's just one of those traits that you have to get rid of.
Yeah, and you don't regret that, do you? You know, I don't look at somebody smoking now and go, oh, God, I wish I could. But then I do know people like that. Don't you?
I remember being in Greece and a lady coming up to me and saying, what are you drinking? And I said, oh, I've got a non-alcoholic gin and tonic or something like that it was. And she said, well, there's no point in drinking it if there's no alcohol in it. And I just looked at her and I went, I just walked off. What? on earth are you talking about? And then it clicked. I thought, when I first drank non-alcoholic wine, I thought it was vile. I also remember eating non-dairy chocolate, thinking it was vile. But when you look at it, it's really just something that your taste buds have got used to. And it's not vile, it's just something different. And that's exactly, I mean, not that I do drink a lot of these non-alcoholic products because I don't want to, because it doesn't cross my mind to go and get a bottle of non-alcoholic wine on a Friday night. I don't need to. And I think it's all about retraining your brain.
Absolutely. But basically, it's what you expect. It's about the expectations not being hit. And I don't buy like bottles of non-alcoholic wine because I don't think of it.
And that's the thing. I find, and I'm happy that the industry does do non-alcoholic sort of choices. I went to Poland, they have a great non, and that's only for when you're going out. I think great in bars, if you want to go out and everyone's drinking and you've gone out on holiday, fantastic. But I'm not that bothered like yourself about drinking it at home. Or the odd time I'll buy one, but then I think, do I really want it? No, I don't. It's not something that I would think, oh, I need to go and get a bottle of non-alcoholic wine. Just no, I don't need to do that.
I worry about the fact that it goes off. Like, I mean, I never thought this about alcohol, but I've got like bottles of fizzy non-alcoholic stuff in the cupboard and had it there for months. And I think, well, if I open that, I'm not going to want more than one glass. When did I ever think that as a drinker? So I'd be like, well, I'm not going to want a glass tomorrow, probably, or for the next. So it'll go off. So I'll save it.
I've literally got to the point where I bought some over Christmas, and then obviously I wasn't here and I was working, and I'd had, like you had, opened a bottle to have a glass, one glass, and then came back and I thought, and threw it in the bin. Never have I ever thrown wine in the bin, ever. I've gone, no, don't want to waste it.
Oh, freedom, isn't it? Isn't it freedom?
Really is. I just love it. I just think it's fantastic. And do you know what? I feel so sad for people that are where I was when I speak to people, because I know that if you just try and do it, it's the best thing you can do.
Yeah. So is there anything else you do to support your mental health?
I started journaling, and I did that because it was a way of getting out and sort of working out in my head the problems that I was going through mentally. So I'd read Dr. Julie's book, Why Did No One Tell Me This Before?, which my daughter had bought me. And it was reading things that you go through, and it was working through. So like I said at the beginning, like I said earlier, why am I bothered if I don't get to the airport? Well, this happened, and then literally working through each one. And then if I'd had a bad day at work, I would come home and write down what those bad things were and why I thought I hadn't made the good decisions, or I hadn't dealt with something well. I hadn't shown, someone had sort of got on my nerves. I hadn't, a bit, as I would say. And I think journaling allows you to leave it on that page. So if you're angry about something or frustrated about something, you can write it down, read it, look at it, what it is, which is just a feeling, and then leave it there, and then it's gone. Because all my worries at the beginning of not drinking was whether I was going to be able to do it. So I wrote down every day how I was, how I felt in myself. And then after I'd written it, I would read it. And then when I'd write down underneath what it actually meant. So say I was feeling sad, or if I was feeling lonely and anything like that, I would always know, well, you've got friends you can speak to. You can talk to people at work. You can speak to your friends on WhatsApp, because obviously I moved from the north to the south. So I've only been living down south for 3 years, and not having people I could just talk to or just ring or know was there. Like my next door neighbour, I was really good friends with them. I didn't have that. So I think the loneliness as well affected me. So what do you do if you were feeling like that? What would you do? Oh, I'd go and talk to my friend. Everything I was thinking about, I wrote down and then sort of looked at it in a way where it could be, something could be done about it. But I think with journaling, if you are worried about stuff, just write it down and you see what it, that's the main thing. It just sort of got it out of me. So I wasn't, I don't know, I can't describe it really. When you sort
you're
of
more objective, don't you? You can actually step back and be, I love Dr. Julie's book.
I always thought people didn't think I was good at my job, didn't, I hadn't done enough at work because I'd come from a different area. Oh, do they like the girl from Manchester? Is she a bit mouthy? Just everything like that, really. So I had a lot of that. And plus, I didn't know anybody. I literally would walk into work and know nobody. So it was a lot for me, a lot to deal with. And you have your kids around, but they're not, you don't want to burden them. And you want to be an adult and sort out your own problems. That's me. I don't like going to people for problems. I sort out my own things. But journaling, I just find it easier. If you just put it on the page or put it on your phone or you write it wherever, you just, it goes. I suppose it's like talking to someone really, isn't it? But you're just talking to yourself on a piece of paper.
Well, Dr. Julie actually says that if you can't afford therapy, or you're not in a position to have therapy, the next best thing is to journal.
Yeah.
And it's not always about the consistency. It's about, that helps, but it's actually about turning to it in times of identifying your feelings, of working through things like you've done there. What am I really thinking here? What am I scared of? Is that true? What would I say if a friend said that to me? How can I reframe this so that I feel better?
Yes.
And then you can let it go. And sometimes I'll have a rant. You know, you have a total rant and there's no logic to it. You just want to get it out.
Yeah. I mean, I'm well known for my mouth at work. I mean, I'm not as bad as I was, because if something bothered me at work, I would rant, and then I'd think, have I crossed the line? Have I upset somebody? And that would be because there might have been something passionate that I was about that I didn't think we were doing enough about. But yeah, I'm a lot better.
And that's a really valid point to make, I think, in sobriety as well. Some of the things change because you implement the other things as well. So yes, sobriety is absolutely amazing for so many different things, but your mental health might not feel better if you're still then fueling your anxiety with unhelpful thoughts and you haven't learned new tools and techniques to deal with that, or how to process your emotions more effectively. So you've got to be putting other things in place. It's not all just about removing the drink, is it?
No, definitely not. Obviously, I listened to your podcasts all the way through January, the ones you did. I think you've done snippets of them this time. And touching on everything, really, which everybody thinks about, and it is all those dark thoughts and how a lot of the time you overthink things. Even working out, like, it's not just about not being able to put, don't go to the shop and buy a bottle of wine on the way home, don't go and, oh, you know, don't drink. It's about learning about everything about it. So you've got podcasts, you've got Dr. Julie, and then you've got William Porter as well, which is learning about alcohol. I think if you're going to stop, you need to learn about what it actually is.
Yeah, you've got to take it off the pedestal.
Yeah, you really do. And by doing that, I had the audio book. I listened to him and it sort of answered a lot of things for me.
So what was your second thing then?
Home life and family life. I find it so much easier. I mean, I'm a mother. I'm a single mother of two grown-up children. And I will still literally lose it and be so, I will just bite, basically, is what I say. I will get frustrated if on the most minor things, sort of like there's a cup in the sink, there's the heating's been on too long, or the lights haven't been turned off. Those little piddly little things that really don't matter, I'd just argue, I'd just shout, scream, lose it, you know, ranty old mother. when really, when you look at it again, it's like, well, why? Is there any need for it? Why do you do it? Well, it's because I've got all this bad feeling in me and I've got this anxiety and I've got everything else and I'm not being rational about things. You know, I'm not looking at, so what if he's left the light on? So what if they've not put the toothpaste back? It doesn't really matter, is it? We're going to end. And now I don't really argue with anybody. I don't argue with the kids. They have a lot of the time, a lot more better relationships with my children than I had before. I didn't have very much patience, I would sort of say. I wasn't the most patient of people. But I think now when I look at it with my life and at work as well, if I see something that I'm not happy about, I just sort of sit and think about it and think, well, am I going to get myself angry? Because all it's doing is making me angry. The only person it's affecting is me, other than annoying everybody else that I've spoken to. But does that benefit me? I mean, I have conversations with my daughter and I'll go, look at the way you look at what you've done now. You've made me really angry. And she'll go, but I haven't made you angry. You've chosen to be angry. And she's right. It's true. We do it all the time. Look at me now. I'm frustrated because of what you did. I don't manage your emotions. You do. So I think you're able to manage your emotions a lot better because you, and it's true. It really is. And you just can't say anything back to that, can you?
You can't really. She sounds like a switched on cookie.
Well, yeah, she's a psychologist, so
I love it.
I probably expected to get that, but yeah, she'll say it, but you can't say anything back to it. You have chosen to be angry. You have chosen to be upset because they're your emotions and they're the way you feel. So if someone says something that I'm not happy about, if someone drives past me and they haven't given way, they don't care if I'm losing it in my car, but I will care because I'm the person it's affecting. So yeah, I think my family and my life in itself is so much better now I don't drink.
There's a wonderful saying that all events that happen around us are neutral.
Yeah.
And we can apply a positive energy to that or a negative one. So it's very much about the stories we then tell ourselves and the stories that we run about that situation or that person or that conversation or the mug being left in the sink. You know, what's behind it? Oh, they don't respect me. Da 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 da. No, that's not true. That's just the story you're using then to sort of justify your anger.
Yes, exactly. And that's it. I think now I live by, is it within my control? No. Will the world keep turning if I don't say anything or do anything? Yes, it will. So it's
acceptance.
It truly is. It's a lot much more easier.
It makes for a better life because actually we can't control anything really. The only thing we can control is our response to things.
Yes.
Everything else is just going to come at us no matter what.
So true. So true.
So you've got a longer fuse is what I'm hearing. It's like you've got that moment of pause between like something happening and then responding, not reacting.
Yes. And I think every morning when it's sort of like some mornings when I'm driving to work, I'll go, today might be a day of lots of crazy jobs going on, or we're going to have a long day. Am I going to change it in any way? Is it in my control? And I go, no. Well, let's just get on with it then. Let's see and deal with what we can deal with. And if we can't deal with that bit till tomorrow, let's deal with tomorrow. You do it with a team as well. It's so much easier because it saves you from worrying about things.
So what's your third thing?
My third thing is work life. I go into work. I have good days. Some days are busy. I wouldn't say I had bad days anymore because I don't. I have very frustrating and busy days where we're pushing towards deadlines and we have to get things in when we can. Obviously, I can't go into details because of the job that I do. But I think when you're coming in and you've got a set of plan and you're setting your tasks and actions that you need staff to do, you've got a clear outlet. You're not going blur your brain going, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, I should have done that. Have I done this? And now I just go in, right, this is what we need to establish. This is what we need to get done today. And this is what we need to concentrate on. And everything runs smoothly. Even, I mean, I remember being given night shifts over in the area, and I had no idea. I was like, I was panic stricken for days, justifying, trying to speak to people to get as much information as I could, because I didn't, bearing in mind I've been a police officer for nearly 21 years, just in case I didn't have no idea what I was doing on that night shift, when really it was the easiest thing I did. But to me, it was like the end of the world, and everyone was going to look at me as if I was this incompetent person that didn't know how to do a job. But now I just go in, and if I'm on a duty day, we have a night shift where we have to cover a very wide area. I now go in and just jobs come in and I deal with them. So I don't have that, driving home going, oh God, I should have done this, should have done that. Yeah, all is good. I mean, managing staff, being patient. I think I'm a lot more aware of other people's feelings and then sort of how I can help them. I think you become aware of a lot more things. You're not sort of under an umbrella of I only care about me. And I think because you have that much pressure on yourself, you don't see other people's struggles. So they might be feeling just the same as you, but you don't acknowledge that because you're too tied up in yourself to understand that that person might not be having a good day as well. So yeah, a lot more easier. I don't hate going to work. All the way to work, having a massive anxiety, or whatever they call it, anxiety, hanging over me to think that I'm incompetent and I don't know how to do my job. But yeah.
That kind of imposter syndrome and self-doubt and lack of confidence that creeps in when we're drinking. Because if you're waking up every morning and failing, like before you've even got up, you know, I said I wasn't going to drink last night. I've had a drink. Well, bang. It's like somebody's kicked you.
And I think now, if someone said to me, can I ask your advice? I'd just go, this is it. And I wouldn't have any qualms in telling someone. And I mean, even now I'll still say, well, if I don't know, I'll go and find out for you. But because not everybody knows everything, but I do find that I manage workloads and my own workload and everybody else's workload a lot better because they have a clearer way of thinking. And I can't even describe it because it's not there anymore. It's weird, really. I think once you don't have self-doubt and you don't have sort of worries about things, which are all constructed because of everything that's going on in your body and mind because you've been drinking. It's crazy, really, because now it's like when you think, oh, why couldn't I have given up smoking because of this nicotine addiction? And it's exactly the same with alcohol. It's hard to explain because it isn't there anymore. If you'd have had a conversation with me 12 months ago, not 12 months ago, but before, as I was coming up to the point where I thought, I can't do this anymore, you would have been talking to a completely different person.
So what advice would you give either yourself or somebody else at the start?
If it was somebody else, I would say, do not be so hard on yourself. Don't feel that you need to put your big girl or big boy pants on to do this, because it isn't about that. Every single person goes through struggles in life, and you're not alone, but seek help, listen to people, talk about it, because again, that's shame. That's really hard. Admitting that you and alcohol don't go together. You feel, oh God, they'll think I'm an alcoholic, but you're not. You just have a really bad relationship. You've become dependent on it and it's not helping you. So I would just take one day at a time and talk to people and read about it and listen to other people. Don't feel a failure. Don't. That's what I would do anyway. That's what I would say to people.
And, you know, one of the phrases that you said to me in the past is you've been brainwashed by the alcohol industry.
And it's true. Even now when I watch and listen to the radio, I was listening to the radio going into work, and all I could hear was gin, 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 chink, chink, chink. And I'm thinking, constantly promoting alcohol. It's Christmas, so we all have to get smashed. And it was all around you. You walk into the supermarkets and it's literally the first thing you see. Bags and bags and bags, loads of wine, loads of beers. And I look at it now and think, I look, like I said, I've gone through my life and I've got lots of decisions that have happened and events that I can remember and think. All of that was because of alcohol, because it's bred into you. When you get to 18, you can go to the pub. And then you go out with all your mates, and that's what's bred into you every single person every single day. The minute you get old enough, from you with your little glass of taste of sherry to me to a little type, probably port or something like that with my auntie, or a glass of wine with a meal, everything is done and is bred into you by the alcohol industry.
And you can walk away, and it's a bloody improvement.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a massive improvement when you walk away.
Don't have it part of your family anymore. Don't have it as a friend.
Get rid of it, dump it.
Well, you do it. You dumped it.
I did dump it quite spectacularly and very publicly.
Yes.
Thank you, Linda. That is absolutely amazing to talk to you. I've been really looking forward to it. I remember you sending me those messages when you were first starting and going to that Mamma Mia concert as well. I remember that. So, congratulations on your year and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
And thank you for having me, and thank you for replying to those messages when I first started talking to you and watching you and following you. And yeah, you've been a great help, and I really do appreciate it.
So I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. If you'd like to find out more about me or working with me, then you can head to louisaevans.com. And on that website, you'll find my Sober Resilience course. If you use Resilience 544, you'll get 30% off as a Sober Rebel listener. And that course can be used at any time in your sobriety. You don't have to be at the start. There's also lots of self-hypnosis recordings, and you can find out how to work with me if you want a little bit of support or some one-to-one sessions. I hope you've enjoyed the episode today, and I look forward to catching you next time.